You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
So we would be missing an opportunity here in the Boston area to speak only of politics while broadcasting from our partner station, WGBH. Now, if you think I'm going to say something about September baseball, you would be wrong. Nobody is talking about the Red Sox this year in Boston, and if they are, we would have to bleep out most of what they are saying this week. No, the Boston area is, of course, one of the global centers of high tech, and we've convened a panel of folks right here in the studio to talk about some pretty exciting developments in the world of robotics. Roomba. Developments perhaps way more exciting than the iRobot Roomba vacuum cleaner unit. You're listening to the theme song of that unit a few years back. The imaginary robots of sci-fi have given way to actual robots, humble but useful, from household applications like Roomba to industrial applications in manufacturing. But this week, iRobot co-founder Rodney Brooks unveiled his latest project, a friendly robot that he believes will revolutionize manufacturing in America. It's a product of his startup company, Rethink Robotics, a robot designed to work directly alongside you in the workplace.
Meet Baxter. Baxter is Rethink Robotics' flagship product in a revolutionary new category of robots with common sense.
Hey, you want to work with Baxter? Well, the man behind the machine, Rodney Brooks, joins me in the studio at partner station WGBH. Brooks is the founder, chairman, and chief technology officer of Rethink Robotics. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
He's also the former director of the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, CSAIL. We also have Andrew McAfee, principal research scientist at the MIT Center for Digital Business, co-author of Race Against the Machine. Andrew, welcome.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we're thrilled to have Kara Miller, the host of WGBH's Innovation Hub, right here in the studio. Kara, it's great to meet you face-to-face.
Thanks. It's great to meet you, too.
So let's start with you, Rodney. Baxter's going to revolutionize everything because he's going to be, going to be my friend?
No, it is going to be a robot that you, the factory line worker, can program, can teach to do a task, can offload the really dull, boring tasks that have to be done in factories, and you get to control it, and you get to be the manager of the robot.
So Baxter is a little like that employee that everyone piles on and makes empty the latrines and do all the bad jobs so that the rest of the employees are free to sort of have fun. And
yeah, my goal in this was really to try to help manufacturing come back to the U.S. of low-cost goods, because we've been outsourcing to different parts of Asia for 60 years now. People in the U.S. don't want to do the sorts of jobs that Chinese workers do on assembly lines. They're dull, they're boring, they're mind-sapping. So how do you build low-cost goods in the U.S.? You have to automate some of those really simple tasks, but small factories can't afford traditional industrial robots. They don't work in low-cost manufacturing. So we're trying to essentially find a way to have a tool to increase productivity of American workers.
Industrial insourcing using high-tech robotics, and Baxter is the key. We're talking with Rodney Brooks, who's founder, chairman, and chief technology officer of Rethink Robotics. How does this actually work psychologically in the workplace, Andrew McAfee, when the robots and the sort of high-tech sort of innovations actually change the toolkit for workers?
I think there's a chance it's going to work quite well. I had the chance to visit Rethink and play with Baxter a couple weeks ago, and I'll vouch it's potentially a game changer. It works as advertised. This is a robot that has kind of a friendly aspect to it, and you grab it by the arms and you guide it through the task that you want it to do. You kind of say to Baxter, "Did you get that?" And it says, "Yeah, I got it," and it can go off and do it. You don't need a computer science degree to program it. You don't need a college education. So Rod's vision of a line worker saying, "Look, I really don't want to load this conveyor belt 8 hours a day, but it needs to get loaded. Can you do this for me?" It appears to me that the answer is yes from Baxter.
"You do it, Baxter," says Andrew McAfee, who's principal research scientist at the MIT Center for Digital Business. You know, Kara Miller, if we had a nickel or a dollar or even a penny for every time someone in the Boston-Cambridge area says game changer, we'd be rich. How do we put this in perspective, Kara?
You know, I think Baxter is an amazing new creation. But I have to say, I don't think people realize the degree to which robots already are pervasive and touch their lives. So right now, there could be robots packing up your salad greens at the grocery warehouse, the salad greens you're going to get later on in the day at the supermarket. They might be disabling bombs in a war zone. But there also, there's a Boston area company which has already deployed robots to hospitals. And this company, Vecna, it has these robots that roll down the halls. They don't bump into anything. They know exactly where things are. They greet you. And if you're a patient who's had chemo all day and you're really weak and you don't want to get up and schlep two wings to go to the pharmacist, it will bring you in your medication. And it has a screen the pharmacist can pop up, so it doesn't have to schlep over to you either and say, here's how to take these meds. And so it's already changing the game, I think.
And you are not a robot, Kara.
I am not.
Human being.
Although, not yet.
Robot radio hosts have been around actually for a while. The hard thing is getting a robot that can interact face-to-face with a human and reassure that it's not some either inanimate object can create a real relationship that can be productive. How much of a scientific question is that, Rodney?
That is a scientific question, and it's one that for the last 20 years, a lot of people at MIT and other places have been working on. We've got some of that in Baxter. Baxter has a face. Baxter has eyes that look.
Eyes that follow you as you move from side to side in front of it, for example.
Yeah, but better than that, the reason for them is when it's about to reach for something, it glances over where it's about to reach, just as you and I would. We all do. We glance where we're about to reach.
So, and it doesn't do that because it needs to. It does that to show you, the human, where it's going
exactly.
to go.
Exactly. So
sounds like you want to move in with Baxter.
No, he loves Baxter.
No, I'm super impressed by the volume of work that Rod and his team did to do things like make this work and make it kind of comfortable for a human to interact with. And Kara talked about how many robots we see around us. I think we ain't seen nothing yet. And when I look at technological progress these days, I'm really reminded of Hemingway's great quote about how a man goes bankrupt. It's slowly and then all at once. And I think we're at the early stages of the all at once.
And I'll add a note of caution here, which is, you know, when people develop robots, they tend to say, well, this isn't really displacing jobs. Well, maybe. But if you can do a factory floor with 50 people instead of 300 people, those jobs may not be desirable jobs, but they did go somewhere.
Yeah, but you know, we currently send hundreds of billions of dollars to China to do manufacturing.
Absolutely.
What if we kept that money in our economy?
And $22,000, which is the price for this thing, while it seems like, expensive if you're talking about a copier, it's actually cheap if you're thinking in terms of salaries. So
it doesn't need healthcare.
It's very, very interesting. All right. We are talking about robots with Andrew McAfee, Rodney Brooks, and Kara Miller. Stay with us right here at The Takeaway. From WGBH, our partner station in Boston, we're talking about robotics here in the high-tech center of the Cambridge-Boston Nexus with Rodney Brooks, Andrew McAfee, and Kara Miller. Kara Miller of WGBH here in Boston is hosting a panel discussion, The New Economy, How Automation is Changing the Game, at Suffolk University next week. At that panel, a lot of the issues of cutting-edge robotics and maybe non-traditional applications is going to be on the table. What sorts of things are you looking at?
Well, you know, we talked about healthcare. We talked about defense. I mean, the amazing strides that are being made in defense. So we think about how dangerous some of these jobs are to disable bombs or to go into very scary places. In fact, the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant in Japan, one of the entities that was sent in there was a robot, because who wants to send a person
robot from iRobot, I should point out.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's interesting. Everyone thinks Japan is the mecca of robotics, or Japan is in front. A week after that terrible event, they called up iRobot and said, please send some of your robots. And we got them in there in 48 hours, and they're still working.
Rodney Brooks, one of the founders of iRobot, now working for another company, Rethink Robotics, that just announced a new robot we were talking about a moment ago called Baxter. Let me throw some sort of rain on the parade here. Robotics in defense, maybe you think of bomb dismantling, but other people think of drones. The use of robotic drones is potentially a very destabilizing factor in warfare and in geopolitics. Andrew, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's potentially quite destabilizing because we're getting very quickly to the point where you can be a very, very long way and control and deploy deadly force with great precision. We haven't really been here before in the history of warfare, and some of my colleagues who study that say that the advantages of having a great big capability you can send around the world, how much good is that when your foe can strike you from halfway around the world using these kinds of technologies?
And drone technology is getting to the point where it's off the shelf, where you can assemble the technology to actually create a credible drone aircraft that has a decent payload with the materials that are commercially available. Yes, Rodney?
Yeah. In fact, it's DIY, do it yourself. There's a whole bunch of technology you can buy and build your own drones. They don't have the weapons on them.
No, but I was hoping you guys would say, that's ridiculous, John. It will never happen. Don't worry. But now I'm worried, Karen.
No, but I think once you make something into a video game, right, and that's what it feels like, and certainly our drones are primarily controlled from Florida in this country, and when you make something into a video game, it feels like there's less consequence. In fact, we've had this... This has been true for a long time, that pilots who were very far away from the action very often had less trouble dropping bombs than people who were on the ground. But you make that 6,000, 8,000 miles away, and it expands it.
And we've always been able to send a missile 6,000, well, not always, but for a while been able to send a missile 6,000 miles away to the people we think are bad guys. The weird part now is the bad guys from 6,000 miles away might be able to inflict some harm this way.
The consequence sort of free mentality that comes with video games may have consequences in robotics, possibly you suggested in defense the use of drones. Let's talk in a moment about whether those consequence-free implications also apply in healthcare and in the workplace, where workers are going to be working side by side with robotics. You're listening to The Takeaway. We are talking cutting-edge robotics here in Boston at Partner Station WGBH with Kara Miller, host of WGBH's Innovation Hub, Andrew McAfee, principal research scientist at the MIT Center for Digital Business, and Rodney Brooks, who's the former director of the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory and chief technology officer, chairman and founder of Rethink Robotics. Kara, let's begin with you. Consequence-free warfare by operators of robot drones, does that become consequence-free healthcare if you basically give someone, as you've referred to, a robot who's in, say, stage 4 cancer treatment? It essentially takes the human out of the healthcare equation, and that's a problem?
Well, I think that the people who create these robots would say, look, these robots are doing menial tasks, the kinds of tasks that we tend to pay a lot for in healthcare. Now, like I said, I really do believe that this is going to reduce the number of overall manufacturing jobs out there. But I want to come back to something Rodney Brooks said, which I think is really important. This is potentially a way of bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. So it used to be that, if you're an American worker who's working in a clothing factory and you're making $8, $10 an hour, there's no way you can compete with somebody in Bangladesh making 20 cents an hour. But if a robot is making the clothes, you can. So it is possible to bring manufacturing plants back, albeit they may be much smaller plants than they once were.
And I think we've seen this before. In the 60s, the movies were about how the mainframe computers were going to get rid of office jobs. They didn't get rid of office jobs. The PC came along, and the ordinary workers in the office got to use computers for the first
time. The financial meltdown got rid of the office jobs.
But there are still office workers. Yeah. There are office workers everywhere. There are people they're using. They've changed what they do. They've changed the value add they give in office work, but they're using computers. That's why it's important to me that these robots we're building, the ordinary factory workers get to control them, get to use them.
We're getting a little bit dystopian here with our conversation, and I want to shift that a little bit because, for example, in healthcare, one of the reasons people don't get healthcare is that it's extraordinarily expensive to take care of them because our healthcare system is so manual labor intensive. Some of the remote diagnostics and monitoring tools that we're seeing, some of these robots, these would be able to increase the the quality of care and lower the price. That's a great thing. We talk about manufacturing and jobs, and we're talking a little bit as if employment's about to fall off a cliff. It's been falling off a cliff. The trend is quite clear. In the U.S., for almost every non-recession year, output goes up and employment goes down. Mm-hmm. Now, the same thing has been basically true in China since 1996. So this trend toward automation and employment is a global trend, and Rethink is not by itself going to massively accelerate
that. I don't want to be contrarian or dystopian here. I was interested in the drone thing because of its destabilizing aspects of geopolitics. But I actually think it's really interesting that people want to have relationships with machines. People anthropomorphize machines. That's an enabling
anthropomorphize machines. They hate it.
I got to say, with Roomba, I was up at iRobot, a founder of iRobot. People started anthropomorphizing the Roombas, giving them names. And there are companies that make clothes for Roombas. And you can dress them, and people do that. It shocked us, actually.
I think one overall trend is that people are going to have to get more educated and move up that sort of education skill, because if the dangerous, menial, repetitive tasks are done by robots, people can't do those anymore, and they have to be in a more supervisory position.
But they can't get injured doing those tasks.
That's
either,
absolutely
so it's
right.
A great
and everybody wants to boss something around. So, you know, if you're the chief of the housekeeping department in your own home because you got a bunch of robots who are doing the job, you know, you feel good about that.
Yeah.
Here.
Well, you know, Google and the iPhone has killed encyclopedia sales. Do we want to go back to paper encyclopedias or do we prefer to have the dynamic
data? Nothing holds a door open like an encyclopedia. Though, there's no iPhone now.
You can use your phone book for that. Oh, no, wait. No, you can't anymore.
Rodney Brooks, Chief Technology Officer and founder of Rethink Robotics, former director of the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, Andrew McAfee, Principal Research Scientist at the MIT Center for Digital Business, and Kara Miller, host of WGBH's Innovation Hub. Guys, thanks so much. Great discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.